Hello and welcome to Wildcards, the show where you get to choose what we spend our time talking about. No Amelia this week, so you've got me, Harriet Price. She's having a lovely time on her second of three honeymoons, I think. She's not bad, is it? But I've got a nice panel to go through the topics with me. I've got Ryan Patton, Mike Bencole, Lizzie Doyle with me in the studio back again, and Mike Kearney as well. So first up, we're going to talk about LFC present, and your options were Divock Origi with 38%. Surprised not more people wanted to talk about him. Salah golden boot, no one wanted to talk about that, 14%. So we've got Minamino with 40% of the vote, he won. So Lizzie, I'll come to you first. The game against Southampton, it felt like a bit of a revival for him, and the fact that he can come back after so long on the sidelines and pop up with a performance in a goal like that, it's just testament to the kind of player he is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the player he is and the character he is, if I'm being completely honest, I was a bit shocked to see him on the team sheet. I mean, I knew Klopp had to change sides. I thought there might have been like one or two little names sprinkled in there, but he did fully changed, didn't he? Pretty much, what was it, 9 changes, Barkanate and Alisson. But even, I would have expected Origi ahead of him, just because I don't know whether the type of game, and I think I've always thought like Origi is a bit of a better player personally, and would have suited the game more, but he comes in, and I thought like his work rate and everything, and his goal was excellent. Like, it was such a good finish. And like, this lad has worked his socks off whenever he's come on the pitch for Liverpool this season, and I think I read that it was like his first Premier League start for, was it since that Crystal Palace game? I think where he scored.
He's not starting months,
I think it
he?
Was something like that, and to come in so fresh and to play like that, and I think he's a great lad. And I mean, listen, who knows what's going to happen in the summer? Who knows what's going to happen next season? But I think that lad can hold his head high and say that he's played a part in this football team, not only just in the cups now. He's now played a part in the Premier League and I'm made up for him. It seems that the whole team love him. And it's just as well, because I think the fans quite like him as well.
Yeah, Mike B. I'll go Mike B and Mike K to differentiate. But it feels sort of unfair because he's the top scorer in the League Cup this season, the top scorer in the FA Cup. He doesn't get a chance to start in either finals. But you can still see that he's had such a big role to play. And I think we all acknowledge this. I saw a few articles saying he's the forgotten player. And that kind of feels a bit disregarding, because I think as fans, we all know how important him and a lot of other players in that wider squad have been.
Yeah, I think so. And I think at the end of the day, if you're going to compete on four fronts like we are doing, and we're literally taking everything to the last day, you have to acknowledge that some players are going to play the role at particular moments. And you're almost as a bridge for some of the more senior players to have their moment in the final or the semi-final. So I think Taki and a few others like Origi can look back on the season and when it's all said and done, they can look back and say, we contributed to a historic season in Liverpool's history. Like, this is one of the best seasons in our history. And Takumi Minamino has played a pivotal role. He's a top scorer in the League Cup, top scorer in the FA Cup. He's played his part. And I think he's someone we should look to keep around next season. I don't think you can find many sort of better fourth or fifth choice options who score the goals that he does, who kind of happy to have that role in the squad. And look, I'm sure he wants to play more games, but he will go down in our history if he continues to contribute the way he has done moving forward, scoring those big goals in this cup competition, just taking us far in this competition. That's what it's all about. And like, yeah, I just feel like the story of Minamino is a story of a lot of players in the fringes of our squad. Someone like Curtis Jones as well, he's contributed and had his moment. So has Origi. So has Harvey Elliott at times had his moment at the start of the season and sort of towards the middle of March, I think he had a few games as well. So those players in the fringes could all tell themselves, we've all contributed to a historic season in Liverpool's history. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, Ryan, Klopp said the other day after the game, it's a crime that Takumi Minamino doesn't play more. What do you think the future looks like for him? Do you see him staying at Liverpool? Obviously, he had that loan spell at Southampton. He did really well. He's come back and played a role. But do you think he's the kind of player at 27 years old that we can keep hold of this season and looking ahead?
I'd like to keep Minamino personally, just because like whenever he's being called upon this season, it's often been in cup games and like limited roles in the Premier League, but he's never really like let us down at any moment. And like what Klopp says, like, I do think he's probably more talented than what maybe we all give him credit for, because like Lizzie was saying, I probably was expecting Origi to have played over him in the Southampton game. But then when he plays and you're like, and he is quite good. And I think I've seen a stat and was like, he scored the 10 goals he scored, he's had 10 shots on target and scored all of them. And you're like he's very clinical in front of goal, and like he can't half strike a ball. Like some of the goals he scored, like it has been like a rocket past the keeper. And like personally, I don't think there's many players who would accept like a sixth choice attacking role and put in the performances like what he does. Like, there's not, I can't think of a player out there. And if there is, it'd be a young player who sometimes, if they're coming in every now and then, they're probably likely to turn in a performance where they're not as effective. So, like, Minamino's being key to our progression to each cup finals. And I don't know if there's a sick choice player out there who would be as effective. So, I would like to see him stick around for next season.
I was going to say, I think we all know Minamino's level in the nicest way possible, but I always remember Neil, like, not long after we got Minamino saying, like, someone's got to be the 21st man or something, and he's not a bad 21st man to have. No. I think if he's all right,
he performs time in, time out, doesn't he, when he's needed?
Exactly. I think it all just depends. I think it's really hard at a club like Liverpool or a club like City where, you know, there is a clear first 15 to 16 and, you know, you're not getting a sniff. Now, if Minamino is happy to stay and to play those bit part roles in the cups and stuff, then that's fine and I'm happy for him. But I always do feel like, you know, we're seeing Origi coming to the end of his contract and he's probably going to go to Milan, it looks like, or AC Milan. It's whether these players are happy to stay though and play those roles. And if they're not, you cannot blame them because they want to play first team football. I don't think he's going to get any stronger, which is what I think that we need in that front line, really, playing in the league, definitely. And I don't think Minamino's necessarily got that. But listen, if he's happy to stay, I'm happy to keep him. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he's knocking on and saying, I'd like to go and play somewhere else, get some first team football. But I think every Liverpool fan would wish him all the best and say thank you for essentially getting us to two domestic cup finals, which we haven't been in for what, 10 years?
Yeah, 100%. And Mike Kay, he played a key role in getting us there. And I think what I've really liked about him and his progression is the fact that when he first comes in and you see him when we win the league, he felt really on the outskirts of it all. He didn't feel like he was that involved in the celebrations. He looked like he'd struggled a little bit to settle into Liverpool in general, I think. And now a couple of years on, he really feels like an integral part of the team. I loved it at the FA Cup final when at the end they brought him over to have his moment in front of the fans. He seems like quite a shy figure. He doesn't want that limelight, but he gradually seems to be settling in more and more, and that's got to be a good sign for the future.
I felt really sorry for him when he first signed, to be honest, because we'd seen him play against us in a way that he probably was never going to play for us, like, so we were sort of getting a player that we know is good, but I don't think we'd ever see him play against, like, for us the way he did against us. And then he comes in and never really gets going because, you know, you can't. We were in the middle of a massive run at that time with as everyone said, a distinguished team. But he contributes. And I remember the derby game, he should score a couple of goals, really, and he doesn't. And I remember thinking, you know what, once he settles, he might be a really good, like, useful player. And then COVID hits and he doesn't really have, he's away from his family. You know, he can speak, obviously, German, because... or whatever, I can't remember what it was, but he had someone to speak to, but isn't like, you know, he couldn't really speak, isn't, you know, with his family, with him there in a new country, possibly a new way of life. I mean, he's been a professional football player for God knows how long, so he's used to all that. But Liverpool's training is completely different to what you imagine everyone else's is. You hear the intensity and stuff like that. And he's come into it in the middle of a season where he couldn't really get a grip of it. And then he didn't really have a proper full, like, pre-season. The games behind closed doors, all weird stuff. Once everything's sort of gone back to normal, it's no surprise that, after his loan spell, he's starting to settle in more now. You know, obviously his grasp of the language will be getting better and better, but everyone will get to know him more now. And obviously that group of players, any signing would be happy coming into you at the moment, because it just looks like a really good atmosphere, really good group of people who you can, you know, trust. And he's been on the sidelines for a lot of the season, even though he's been crucial in the cup runs. And he must have been, because I know I would be. You'd be thinking, when am I ever going to get a chance in the league here?
Yeah.
You know, but he's at least he's just kept his head down. And what we don't see is him in training every week. All the players see that, the manager sees that.
That's what Milner said, didn't he? Milner was like, yeah, it might be a surprise to you when you see them on the pitch, but when you see how hard all these players train every day, it's not a surprise to Klopp. It's not a surprise to them that they perform at such high levels when they're needed. And Minamino is one of those for me, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you could say that for anyone, really, who comes in. I remember when they dropped Reece Williams in, when we had to, really. But, you know, if he wasn't good enough, he wouldn't have been getting this to start, and we might have been shuffling other players around to play there. But eventually, the players that play in training, you know, it must be some intensity that I'd love to go and watch just be there watching a full training session, like just in preparation for the game.
Why do you just ask Pepper? Yeah.
But like, they must be playing better games against each other than they are against, like, I don't know, Norwich.
I think on that as well, like, so I totally agree. And I think knowing when, like, players on the fringes of this Liverpool team, like, none of them, it's not often the clamorous move. I know Origi is going to move on to AC Milan next season. But I think it must be like so enjoyable to be a part of this group. Like, is it better as a professional footballer to be on the fringes and play in this group of players than maybe move to like a 10th place team or a mediocre side abroad? Like, I think it's an interesting question to like discussion to have, because personally, I think I'd rather be amongst this positive atmosphere and playing a part in like
and winning trophies.
Rather than go and maybe just having like a sort of bland time at an average club.
Love how you just called everyone temp down bland.
I know. I get that's me being like probably
not Villa. Come on, Villa.
Yeah, I'm not obviously not Villa.
We're all Villa fans this weekend. Try not to Anfield on our Villa shirts.
Yeah, anyway. I don't mean to be offensive there, but it's probably froze into glasses on there.
Well, we'll see what happens with him in the future. I'd like him to stick around, but we shall see. We'll move on to LFC Pass, and now is a good time to remind you all you can pay your wild cards if there's anything you don't want to talk about in the next few categories. You don't have to, but you can only use it once. Ryan, you've done this once before, you know the drill. So the topics for LFC Pass were Newcastle 13-14 with 15% of the vote, Middlesbrough 16-17 with 29% of the vote, and the winner was Wolves 18-19 with 55% of the vote. It's a familiar scenario, Mike. I think you were being filmed that day, so I'm going to come to you first, Mike K. But we were going into the game 1 point behind. We needed City to slip out. We knew the job that we had to do, but we also knew that it wasn't in our hands. What was that experience like for you? I love that video of you on that day, actually. And I remember you sitting in the ground and saying, you can't argue with who's won this league. And it's not like there is a loser, because taking it to the final day and being 1 point behind, it felt cruel, didn't it?
It was weird, to be honest. I mean, more the weird part being more like in it on the final day, probably needing snookers. I feel a bit more hopeful this year round. Villa and Brighton are probably, Brighton at that time and Villa now are probably different prospects for City, even though they're still massive favourites on the Sunday that we're coming into. But back then, it was just a case of, just what if? We've got to do our job, and then what if? And the being filming part was weird walking there, because everyone was looking at you like, oh, that's weird. But then once you're in the ground and that, like, it was, I literally forgot about it, to be honest. And there's probably somewhere, you know, in the digital team at Liverpool, a boring conversation that me and Anastasia are having about half time, about what we're doing later and all that crap. And I forgot the microphones, honest, to be honest. But yeah, it was weird. It was a weird day. And for when Brighton do get the pen, it was a pen, I think, when, and they go ahead to get that goal. You didn't want to get carried away, but you couldn't help it for a bit. And then you realise once it went 1-1, it was like, oh yeah, that was nice, wasn't it? But it's easy to say in hindsight, I didn't really feel distraught, because I knew good times were still ahead.
Yeah.
You know, I knew the Champions League, but it was massive that going into the European Cup final after that. And we did have to win that, because I wouldn't have known what would have been after if we didn't. I mean, I'm not doubting the character of the squad, because we've dealt with upsets and that in the past. The year before Kiev and coming back and win the Champions League the year later, but it would have been an incredible blow to be so close in the league and then not to win in Madrid. Thankfully, we did. And, you know, that as we know now, we were in the middle of, apart from that 2021-22 season, 2021 season, which was just eviscerated with injuries and all sorts of just not good times, like six defeats on the bounce and stuff like that. What the Liverpool we know was already on the way there, and we've grown since then, because this season's been absolutely phenomenal. But I said I don't ever really feeling like absolutely gutted, like, oh, it's gone. I knew we'd be there or thereabouts under Klopp and with them with these players.
Lizzie, what was that moment like in the ground where everyone had, you'd heard whispers that Man City had gone one goal behind, and for those few minutes we were dreaming that we it could be done?
Not gonna lie, I think it was like the best 90 seconds of my entire life. I'd say it right here right now. I remember I was a bit like Mike, and I was like, I can't get too carried away, but Jesus Christ, for 90 seconds, oh, I was carried away. And I'll always remember it because there was someone who went down injured, and there was a break in play, and then all you heard was bright, and there was like all this whisper, and then I mean, I was literally giving me goosebumps, and then like the whole stand stood up, and I had like a tear in my eye, and I was like, oh my God. And then I had some
you want to be like, Mane, Salah,
honestly, like, Virgil. I'd be asking Virgil over stuff and just about the right score. I'd ask for his number. So there was a fella who was sat behind me, and he went, well, yeah, sit down. And I turned around and I went, Brighton have scored. And he went, I know, but will you sit down? I thought, oh, will you? I went, he's down injured. I thought, no, I'm going to enjoy myself. And I did for that 90 seconds. And then, do you know, I always remember it as well. And this is why I want to batter Wolves. Like, I really want to batter them in the last game of the season, because you'll remember, they kept doing this thing where they kept going, it'll go quiet. Then they go, way, as if to be like teasing us, as if one of the teams had scored, like they were being like little weirdos.
There's definitely all sorts of abuse that was hailed at Wolves that have been listed in the cutting room from that time.
It was a great 90 seconds. But even to be honest, I think, like Mike said, we all left just sort of buzzing that we managed to get it to that point, and knowing full well that we were going into a European Cup final. Lo and behold, you know, like, look what's happening this year. Do you know what I mean? And that's why, like, I'm quite relaxed about the weekends as well.
Yeah, Mike B, we've got the same opposition. It feels like a bit of deja vu, but Lizzie's right to say there wasn't any sense of disappointment, even though we won that game and we hadn't come away with the league. And it did feel unfair that it was only 1 point, but still we were so proud of what the team had achieved. And because we had Madrid to look forward to, we were all in such a good mood and we wanted to wish them well on their way. Do you think it will be a similar sort of vibe this year if we do come out of it and we have won the game, but it's only 1 point in it?
I think it'll be even better, because you have to think about where we were in January, and the story of this season is different from the story of that season. The story of 18-19 is Liverpool had the chance to go 10 points clear in January and don't take that chance when they lose to City at the Etihad. So we had it all to lose from that point. City have had it all to lose from January, where they were 14 points clear of us. Yeah. And we're in a position now, we've clawed it back. So we've been the hunters since January. We've got it back to a position where it's 1 point. The psychology of that is slightly different, I feel. And I feel like we're going to go into this thinking, listen, if we win the league today, that is a bonus. We've already got two trophies in the cabinet. We're in the Champions League final. They wanted that more than we did, by the way. We're in Champions League final. So we can go into it thinking, if we win the league, great, fantastic, amazing. But we've got a Champions League final to look forward to, and we could complete a historic treble. So I honestly think the ground on Saturdays or Sunday is going to be like a real party atmosphere. We've got it all to gain. They've got it all to lose. And I just thought, I buy into the romance of football so much, right? I just think there's something that's going to happen.
Don't say it, mate.
I'm not going to jinx it. But like, I just, you know, you have that feeling in your bones. I can't keep it to shake yourself. The feeling. Yeah,
I've got a really good gut feeling as well. It's weird. Let's all feel it, but not.
What I would say, right, is another thing I think works to my advantage is they're playing at home. Playing at Brighton last year, whenever it was, 2019, that was different, right? Because you don't have the nervousness of your own fans, the tension of your own fans. If I remember correctly, the Wolves game a few years back, it got a bit weird because then, like, City scored and then the ground went a bit weird and a bit deflated and stuff. They're going to have that. If we score early and it's 0-0 at halftime in their game, it's going to get tense. I'm painting the picture, guys.
I'm so nervous.
Yeah, if City don't score in the first 10 minutes, like always.
I know.
Yeah.
De Bruyne, 3 minutes.
De Bruyne, 7 minutes, yeah.
Hope so. Yeah.
No, Ryan, do you think the pressure is off a little bit? Because if you look back to that game, we hadn't won a Premier League yet, and it'd been 29 years. And there was a sense of, we got so close, but we couldn't manage it. We've done it now. We know that we're capable of it. We've won two trophies already this season. Is there a little bit less pressure than there was this time a few years ago?
Yeah, I'd say so. And just because we've won like trophies like already this season as well. Like, our season isn't so much riding on the Premier League trophy this season, I would say.
Yeah.
Even though against the Wolves game like a couple of years back, we did have the Champions League fans to look forward to as well. So I think even going into that game, I wasn't as much like, I didn't feel that much pressure going into that one even because we still had something to look forward to at the end of the season, which I was going to play my wild card. This is the first time I've played it. So
go on.
Like, this could be an incorrect usage of the wild card.
No.
I'm going to go for it anyway.
I was going to say it's sort of on the same point
because I was going to use this to talk about the Middlesbrough game in 16-17 because I think with that one that's such an important like point in like Klopp's journey at Liverpool, because that's like the one season when we didn't have something else to look forward to afterwards. So Wolves 18-19, we did have the Champions League finals to look forward to. So even though it ended with like a slightly deflated thing, that City has pipped us to the title, we were thinking, oh, well, we've got a finals to look forward to now. Whereas in that 16-17 season, we didn't have anything to look forward to after it, really. We were banking it on that to qualify for the Champions League final. Like under Klopp, like he's managed to, one of the things that he's so good at is like you utilize momentum in a positive way. And that's the only time where if we didn't get to the Champions League that season, it probably would have halted the momentum slightly, because it would have meant that like what is this Liverpool's team story for next season. Whereas, I remember that game at Anfield, it was nervy for the first 45 minutes. And the previous home game in Southampton, I think we drew 0-0 and Mane was out injured and stuff like that. So it wasn't as if like, I think Middlesbrough were already down, they weren't a very good side, but it wasn't as if like, I felt really, really under pressure before that game. Like I was really nervous thinking, can we get a goal? And then for the first 45 minutes, he'd managed to keep us out. We were attacking at the top end in the first half as well. And then Wijnaldum gets that goal. It's like on the cusp of half time. And it's such a huge goal. And then it's like it's a stroll for the second half, but that continues this Liverpool team's upswing of momentum going on to the next season, signing Salah, and then continuing to what we are now. So I just think that's one of the most pivotal moments in Klopp's management at Liverpool.
Lovely use of the wild card. Lovely. Seamless.
I know it was a little bit of a cheat, but it was a continuation. No, you're right.
We'll let you off. The rest of you have your wild cards in play as we move on to general football. And the topics were top four with 21%, the Europa League final with 34%, and the winner was relegation with 44%. So from one end of the table to the other, Mike B, I'll come to you first. It's going to the final day. There's three teams that are in it. Can you sense what is going to happen? You think you've got a good feeling about Liverpool? What about the other end of the table?
Yeah, so I have a fairly good feeling about what's going to happen here. So obviously the games tonight are massive, right? So Burnley go to Villa and Everton host Palace. And I think those two games will be decisive in terms of what happens. And I get a feeling that Everton, for them, a point might be enough. A point tonight might be enough for Everton, unfortunately.
Lizzie rolls her eyes.
That's not a good feeling, Mike. That's a bad feeling.
It's not a good feeling, but I think they're going to lose tonight. That's my good feeling. And I think Villa will win tonight as well. So I think Villa will beat Burnley. It's the last game at home. They're going to be up for it. Everton will lose to Palace, and it's going to go down to the last day. So Everton have got to get something away at Arsenal.
Speaking of my language.
The top four still. Mm. And Burnley travel away to Newcastle, who have nothing to play for. And I think Leeds will beat Brentford because they've been a bit unlucky in a few of the games they've played recently. So yeah, there's every chance Everton still go down, guys. That's my gut feeling.
Lizzie, go on then. The state of play. So Everton are currently 16th. They're 2 points ahead of Burnley and 18th, and they've both got two games to play. So Leeds sandwich in the middle on 35 points, but they've only got the one game left. So Everton could have secured safety with a win over Brentford. Didn't manage it. It all went wrong for them, didn't it? I do still think they're going to stay up. What do you think?
Oh, I think I really love Mike's, natural positivity. Good on you. But sadly, I don't think it's going to happen. I think like we could all do it. Listen, anything can happen. And they've been very flaky this season, Everton. And God knows what could happen. But for me, I'm with you, Harry. I think almost like a point will keep them. I think a point will keep them if they can get it against Palace. And then, like say, Arsenal at the end of the season, Arsenal have been a bit mad, haven't they? And I know they're going for top four. They've got more to play for. Potentially could leave them a bit more vulnerable. Well, it's not even really about Everton for me. I have Leeds are the worst team I have seen. They are horrendous. Like when we beat them 6-0, I thought, good God, like these are shite. And I thought, like, when we played Everton, they were even worse than Everton, I thought. And just watching them in some of the games, I think they've been really bloody bad this season. And I feel like they're not going to beat Brentford for me. I just don't see a world where that happens. You know, Brentford did have a bit of a dip in the season, but they've come back to decent form. You know, they play good football. And I just think that will be a step too far for Leeds, to be honest. I think their fate is on the verge of being sealed. Like I say, we'll see what happens tonight. Burnley should win because Gerrard's going to be playing his children. So that should be fine. And listen, Palace are not a team that'll sit back. Palace will have a go at Everton, and that's what makes me think, literally, I have no idea which way that game will go. But I think it's more to do with the fact that Leeds, I think, are a much worse team than Everton, and I can't see them getting anything more than it is Everton, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Ryan, I'll come to you because Burnley, they tried to bring in a new manager to give them a bit of a kick. It's not really done that. I kind of sense that Burnley have been punching above their weight for a few seasons and they've performed above how they should. I do still think they'll be saved because, as Lizzie said, Leeds look a team a bit devoid of identity, and that's a bit surprising really, because they came up and they were a team that played their solid style of football. They played a really attacking, exciting style of football. Yes, they conceded goals, but they scored enough to stay up. It's all gone wrong a bit for them now, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think because that's what sort of Bielsa sides do, don't they? He gives them a team like a clear identity, and then obviously they're so intense as well, but they do tend to like tire eventually because the demands are so much. And then yeah, and like they're just it's a bit frantic and a bit mad, isn't it, watching Leeds, like when the style and you sort of when they get dragged into a relegation battle, teams with that like frantic mad style sort of, they struggle to recover from it, and they just like they're capable of losing rather than drawing all the time, and it's like big defeats as well. Because even like that game against City, they actually weren't that bad. They were attacking them, and then they end up getting was it 4-0 in the end. Like I feel like Leeds have been on like the receiving end of like some heavy defeats, and like usually when teams go down, it is the teams with like the worst goal difference. It's also just like the general rule from what happens, and Leeds' goal difference is terrible. And like, I don't think bringing the new manager in has helped then, like, because they play that like mad frantic style. Like the key players have been getting sent off lately, and they're missing the running, loads of injuries because they're physically like zapped. And I don't see them picking up a point against Brentford. And I think Everton will be fine. I think Everton will pick up points tonight personally. And I think Burnley will get a draw, and then that takes them above Leeds. And I think Leeds get beat by Brentford, and I see that being the bottom three.
Okay, interesting. Mike Kay, I've got a quiz question for you. Which team this season has had the most red cards?
Probably Everton.
Give me a number.
8.
Well, you've done really well. It's 6. Yeah, is Everton on 6? Okay. Yeah. That's a lot of red cards. What do you think is going to happen, Mike?
Disappointingly, Leeds will go down. Everton can lose both games and not really go down. I've been saying this to some of my Evertonian mates and family members, and they've been going, it's a massive game tonight. And I was going, what are you panicking for? He's a safe, Leeds are shite. And they're going, you can't say that, you can't say that. I'm going, I've made me peace with it, I can. You're going to be all right just by the skin of your teeth. And it's upsetting because all 5 teams that are down there are shite and shouldn't be in the league, because Everton down in the league are terrible. All terrible teams have bad seasons, bad decisions in you know, not just the 12 months of this season, but a couple of seasons periods. Just not good football teams. But Norwich will probably inevitably come back up next season to do the same thing the season after. It was weird when Burnley got rid of Dice, because I thought, what are they doing? But then they had they won like 3 out of 4. I was like, oh God, they might do it here. But they look back, if they end up going, they'll look back to that Norwich game where they lose 2-0, and they should have just beat Norwich. Should have beat Norwich, and that would have been between Everton and Leeds, because they'd have got some momentum from it. and he didn't. And Everton will probably look back to the Chelsea game, really, where Chelsea sort of turned off the last couple of weeks before the FA Cup final, weirdly saving themselves. And they've been 1-0 late, and that's probably been the boost they've needed. And it's just Leeds who are not good. But, you know, to be fair to them, they had Bamford out a lot of the season, a couple of injuries here and there.
They've had a lot of injuries, yeah.
But at the same time, they've just not been nowhere near the level. I don't think any of them have, and I think two of them will be very, very lucky to be getting away with it.
Yeah, exciting last day of the season. We'll see what happens. We'll move on to general sport. Everyone always hates when the Grand Prix wins, and that is this one again. The Spanish Grand Prix with 45% of the vote. But your other options, if you've still got a wild card in play, are the Saudi Golf Series with 29%. I won't be asking you a question because I have no idea what that is. And the French Open with 25%. Ryan, you've played your wild card, so talk us through the Grand Prix.
Lucky. I was trying to like look away from the camera even to see him. Yeah, well, all I can say is probably if you take all the sports into account, F1 is my least favorite and least that I know about. And the Grand Prix is F1, isn't it?
Yeah.
that's how little I know about.
Let's save some time for the last topic, shall we?
Yeah. If I didn't play my wild card already, I'd play it. But I also don't really know that much about the others.
Right. How many F1 drivers can you name?
Lewis Hamilton.
Tenable.
Yeah.
Oh, Lewis Hamilton. Max Verstappen.
Yeah, nice.
Verstappen.
I think my pronunciation was impeccable there. who else? Michael Schumacher, but yeah, I know he's not. He's
not anymore.
Yeah. No, I can't count that.
Kids in it though, isn't he?
Yeah, is he called Max Schumacher?
Mick
Schumacher.
So nice. Black.
And then I've seen the film Rush. So that's it. Can't think of either of the names.
We'll put you out of your misery. We'll leave
you there. Thank God. Yeah, that was painful.
Might be watching you into the Grand Prix.
Honestly,
I'm getting quite into it, but
I'm in similar territory to Ryan here. I have no idea about any of these sports. I have no idea what the Saudi Golf Open was you just described. I don't know.
It's interesting, you know.
The French Open, I guess. Is it? What's it? You tell me what it's about.
Then, I have no idea.
Our wild card, yeah, because the last one is I'm all over it. So, yeah. So I mean, I was just going to talk about the French Open in a way of like, I'm one of the, it seems, actually I don't want to obviously curse it until it's in my hands, it seems I might be one of the extremely lucky ones to be in Paris. And as we're in Paris, the French Open is on. And I feel like I want to pop down and see Rafa Nadal.
Phil Blackmore's going, isn't he? The day before,
I think. Yeah, love all that. So, but it'd be interesting to see like if Djokovic plays as well, just with all the stuff that's happened with him. So with the Saudi Golf Series, we'd done an interview work about it. And I was a bit like the same, not heard of it, but it's so interesting. Essentially, like what happened with Newcastle, there's a big question of sports washing around it. And they're trying to do a breakaway, almost like a Super League thing, which is going to be funded by Saudi investors. And they basically want to take away from like the really traditional competitions. So like the PGA and stuff like that. And they've tried to get like some really big names. And there's the first competition is happening in July in London. And it's just caused murder because there's like, but no one knows what's going to happen. They're saying they've only got like 20 players, but no one knows who they are. Like it's all been a bit of a mess really.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting in more like the conversation in general that a lot of people are having around sports washing, because I want people to double check this, but I'm sure some of the investment might be from the Newcastle owners as well. Oh, wow. But it's just that bigger theme, isn't it? Of like, you know, they're trying to attract superstars away to a Super League. I wonder where we've heard that before. So that's why that one is interesting, but probably more as a broader topic than the actual league itself, because I wouldn't have a clue on that either. But that's all I know about it.
No, that's good insight there.
And there we go. That's all I can offer to this conversation with the wildcard played.
I mean, it was. We had three F1 drivers. We had a great conversation about that. Mike Kay, what are you talking about here? I'm not even going to ask you a question because you'll probably ignore it.
To be honest, I'm not the biggest F1 fan. I'm not. Massively, I like tennis, like I'll watch it, but I won't watch it like season. I won't go out my way to watch it, so I'm not that bothered. I would have played my wild card just to skip this round, to be fair, but I think Lizzie's the most interesting one there is the Saudi one, because it just leaves a bad taste. Yeah. Really, they're trying to get into it with footy, and they're doing it with golf now. So where's the line they're going to draw? Because they obviously want to force them way into sports and global, like the big, really global sports to get a platform to go further and further and further with it until it's just more accepted, really, that we'll have maybe a couple more owners from that region in the Premier League, maybe, or I don't know, in other sports as well. And I always used to say, if I couldn't be a footballer, I'd be a golfer, right? Because it's a boss life. You know, you're walking around.
getting a bronzy ball.
Yeah, but going like to belter places as well, like some really lovely golf courses, boss countries and that. And then I'd like to think if I was a top 25 golfer in the world, you'd have a really happy life for it.
Right, so, Mike,
imagine getting all the money from that. I just wouldn't do it. It leaves an awful taste. So I'm going to stay as a top 25 golfer on the European tour, please.
Right. Mike B, would you rather be an F1 driver, a golfer, or a tennis player?
What a question. Do you know what? Mike and I, we can form like a little golf partnership, the double mics taking over. Why not? Let's go for
magic mics.
nice. Oh, right. We'll move on to something I think you're all going to want to talk about. And that
here
is Agatha Christie. With a whopping 64%.
This is the main event.
The other options were Eurovision. Clear your daddies. I feel sorry for Eurovision. In another week, it would have won, but it's only had 23% of the vote. Or your Jubilee game with 11%. If any of you have got a Jubilee game...
Who's put that on the poll?
I don't know. It wasn't me. People are going to think it's me, so I'm saying right now it wasn't me. If any of you have got a Jubilee game, I will be shocked. So let's go to Agatha Christie. Lizzie, you're dying to talk about it. I just can't believe that Vardy was the one that took this to court, and she has put all of this out in the open.
It's incredible. And let's all be quite clear here, this is an ongoing court case. So watch what you say because we don't want to get dragged into it. That's all I'm going to say. As much as it'd be my shining moment, I don't want to be taken to court by Vardy. Yet, it's amazing, really, that she's the one that's brought it up. When I've been following, he's brilliant, the BuzzFeed journalist. I think his name's Jim.
Threads are so good, aren't they?
Or something.
That's it, yeah.
He's excellent and he's been covering it, but he covers it really straight and like down the line, but in a very sarcastic way. And like when he like released the text between her and an agent about like talk about the evidence, talking about the stories and does this person think this and are they going to say it's come from me? I'm like, girl, you've brought this on yourself. Yeah. Like, I honestly think it's absolutely bonkers. And it's funny because I've seen a couple of tweets. God, I'm going to sound like a terrible human being, but let's live and die by our swords here. But like a lot of people going like, oh, this money could have been spent on so many like better things and all that. And I'm like, I know it's really terrible, but will you shut up? Because it's really, really
let me enjoy it.
I'm like, can't someone do a Netflix series? I think there's actually a podcast out and everything about it at the moment.
Great.
I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called something like
this. Probably Agatha Christie or something.
Yeah. And it's utterly fascinating to watch like these two, you know, ultra like alpha females going head to head. Both of them broke back down, so stubborn. And listen, like, you know, I just think, what are you doing taking on a girl from Crocky in court? Because it's only going to go one way.
Ryan, it's been 2.5 years since the iconic ... It's Rebecca Vardy's account. Talk me through how you felt at the time when
Boss legal, by the way, she didn't say Rebecca Vardy. Oh, she left it on account.
She left it on account. Ryan, are you covering this at all?
Yeah. So we're covering it for the echo, and it's just revelation after revelation. It's just unbelievably fascinating. I've seen someone say it's them. It's the biggest act of self-sabotage since Brexit. Which I think it's all quite accurate at the moment. The original tweet is going to go down in history as one of the internet's finest moments, isn't it? I feel like, no, the internet's been amazing in terms of bringing people together and stuff like that, but it's one crown of moments was Colleen Rooney's Twitter thread.
The internet's been amazing for a lot of reasons, but yeah. Have you seen that tweet?
Because obviously the Agatha Christie is like what it became known as, but someone also called it the Scouse Trap, which I thought was brilliant as well.
Yeah.
So good. Mike B, have you been following the case closely? I find it really funny that all this really private information is needing to be dragged up. And if you look at it seriously, like if that was your life and all your messages and all your private information is being released and you've brought that on yourself, like that is mortifying.
Could you imagine?
I just would be absolutely mortified. And Rooney and Jamie Vardy, I mean, I'm talking about Wayne Rooney and Jamie Vardy having to go to court. Like, isn't it just, I mean, why?
The Wayne Rooney, Jamie Vardy stuff's absolutely wild. Like, some of the stuff has come out about that, like, stuff like Mahrez that came out was a bit like, what is going on here?
Peter Andre?
Yeah.
Peter Andre's come up. Like,
that's what I felt sorry for.
His video repeatedly saying, just to make clear that this is not true, this information is not true. It's the highlight of my year. I spent 5 minutes watching it, enjoying every second.
Honestly, no one is safe. Anyone could come up next in this story.
No one is
honestly
safe.
Anyone could come up. It could be one of us. We could somehow be in this story, but no
one is safe.
It's just been so wild. And like, there's the pictures of Wayne Rooney like in his suit and stuff, looking like a supply teacher. And apparently Rooney and Vardy nodded at each other in court and just all of this weird stuff. I've just found it fascinating. And do you know what? Because the news has been so grim for the last like 6 or 7 months about like Ukraine, obviously, and that's been really sort of horrible to look at. And the cost of living crisis as well, and everything with families struggling to put food on the table and pay their energy bills. This has been kind of like a lighthearted reprieve of it, like celebrity gossip and drama. So yeah, I've been following it really, really closely. There's the thread by the Jim Waterstone, I think, who's been like, it's the way he tweets it. Like he tweets it in this really deadpan, sarcastic
brilliant
tone. It's just so, so good. Like I've been reading through the tweets every single day and looking forward to what happens next, I guess.
Mike Kay, what do you think is going to happen? I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I don't know if we're allowed to speculate on this, really. Oh, Lizzie's saying probably not. Mike Kay, tell me instead, are you enjoying it? Are you on Twitter every day?
We don't want to be involved. Mike Kay doesn't want his WhatsApps all over the gap.
Mike Kay will be fine. He's used to the fame and the fortune and everything.
I've been following it, and I reckon I get an extra layer of enjoyment out of this because I get my phone to read it out to me, and these verbatim WhatsApps are incredible. There's lots of WhatsApps, you can go and find them. It's not hard, they're all over the gaff, but I don't even know what I'm allowed to say, really. I know I'm allowed to say that, like, literally everything that's out in the WhatsApps and stuff like that. Like, I'm looking at it thinking, what are you doing? Like, what? I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when she's gone. Yeah, I'm taking this to court. I'm surely.
Jamie's egging her on, going, go on, babe. I'll support you.
But someone must have gone, nah, you know, just nah. This is not a good idea. This is not a good idea. I don't recommend you go to court. And she's gone to court thinking, I'm going to look bossier. And then on day one of a like cross examination, it was like, oh my God, like what on earth made you think I've got a solid case here?
Like, when she had to explain what FFS was.
Yeah. Am I allowed to say? Yeah.
When she said, if I'm being honest about it, and the judge said, I do hope you're being honest under oath in a court.
I think my favorite moment's been when, because of the agent said she'd lost the phone in the North Sea. Rooney's lawyer said like, oh well, it's in Davy Jones's locker, and Rebecca Vardy turns to court and said, who's Davy Jones?
she'll look back in about 5 years time and go, why did I do that?
Mike, I reckon you should go put your goggles and your flippers on and go and find that phone.
Someone needs to find that phone.
We'll be sorted for life. Do you know what I love as well? The power play the power play of the outfits is huge. Like she turned up in all black, didn't she? With the sunglass, and I was like, what this is like. Then Colleen turns up in all black when she's in the box. It's all this like quite conservative,
I love it,
suit like dressing, and it the psychology of it is just mind-blowing and fascinating. And the next best thing that's coming out of them is the pictures of Wayne Rooney and Jamie Vardy, because I've never seen anything so beautiful. And he's framed in AM The Wolf.
Well, it needs to be a Netflix thing. There needs to be some sort of dramatization of it, because it's incredible and it would do absolute numbers.
Who do you think plays the lead roles?
Would you say Jodie Comer's in it? Somewhere.
Jodie for Colleen. Yeah. Defo.
Unreal.
I would take
it. Gotta be, hasn't it?
Colleen, yeah.
Wow, oh my God. Have covered some ground on this world card. We've gone from Minamino to Agatha Christie. It's been a wild ride. Thank you, Magic Mikes, Lizzie and Ryan, for joining me on what's been a lovely Thursday lunchtime. Enjoy the weekend, whatever you're doing. It's never going to get this good again. Whatever happens on Sunday, we should be very proud of this team. And look, we've got Paris next week to look forward to as well. Up the Reds, and see you soon.